You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Clinton, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the last edition of Tech Talk Radio for this year. I'm Andrew McComb. Well, we've reached the end of 2007, and hasn't it just flown? Lots of exciting things have happened in the past year, what with the changing of the political guard and the Telstra shenanigans, the launch of Naked DSL at last, and for the computer buffs, the release of Microsoft's Vista and Apple's Leopard, not to forget the infamous iPhone, just to name a few. There have been more toys and gadgets thrown at us this year than any other time I can remember. And if you're into gadgets, or more importantly, you have a partner who understands your passion, it shouldn't be too hard for him or her to find something for your Christmas stocking later this month. We're going to round out the year with some invaluable information about website design and take a look at the harsh reality for Telstra and the newly elected Labor government. Last week it became official. Telstra had been found to be misleading when it came to claims surrounding its next-G mobile data network. As Adam Turner would say, no, say it isn't true. This will most likely put Telstra on the back foot leading into 2008 and make the prospect of high-speed broadband for this country just that little bit more distant. How much more of this do we, the consumer, have to put up with? Somehow, I think 2008 will be more swings and roundabouts for broadband in this country. Did I mention web design? How important is a good-looking site these days? The answer is very. Did you know that 75% of web users admit to making judgments about the credibility of an organisation based on the design of its website? And 83% of businesses use the internet to search and find potential vendors. If that didn't surprise you, then count yourself amongst 75% of web users. On our final show this year, we're going to talk to Lance Loveday and Sandra Niehaus, authors of a new book, Web Design for Return on Investment. Based in Sacramento, California, Lance and Sandra walk us through the right things and wrong things to do when building that perfect website. Whether you're a CEO of a large corporation or just rebuilding the website for the local footy club, this is Must Listen Radio.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner plans to jump off the SS Microsoft in quest of greener pastures. The federal court rules Telstra lied about Next G. The gloves are off with Kevin and Sol. Three drops its broadband pants in line with Optus and Vodafone. And Google and TomTom team up together. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. The last one for 2007. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week with Dr. Ron Smith.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the federal court rules against Telstra's Next G advertisements. Google now optimised for Apple's iPhone. Facebook apologises for violating member privacy. In-flight internet returns to US skies. And an IBM breakthrough may shrink supercomputers. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The federal court last week ruled that Telstra had misled its customers about the coverage of its third-generation Next-G mobile telephone network. The legal action, brought by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, challenged Telstra's advertising campaign, which said that Next-G had coverage everywhere you need it. The federal court found that the campaign was misleading or deceptive under the Trade Practices Act. Justice Michelle Gordon said that whether a user could obtain coverage depended in part upon where the person was, what handset that person was using, and in some cases, whether that handset had an external antenna attached. Telstra defended its advertising campaign, saying that it gives its customers credit for understanding advertising. Mr. Greg Booth, Group Managing Director of Telstra's Countrywide.
If we compare the old CDMA network, the old technology, we had something like 3,500 base stations on that technology. On the new NextG network, we now have something like 6,000 base stations. And so, you know, we wanted to get the message out that this is, you know, Australia, and it is, Australia's largest and fastest mobile network.
Telstra said it intended to appeal the decision, which it described as very disappointing. Google has revamped its homepage, now optimized for access from an Apple iPhone. iPhones are automatically detected, and the new Google landing page provides quick access to Gmail, Calendar, and Reader, as well as auto-completed suggestions for the search box. A link also provides the option of using the classic Google homepage instead. A Google spokesman said last week that Google plans to optimize its applications for other phones as well. The integration of a customized homepage with Apple's iPhone is notable given Google's effort to expand into the wireless market after its recent announcement that it would bid in an upcoming wireless airwaves auction to potentially launch its own network in the United States. In a bad week for the social networking golden child Facebook, CEO Mark Zuckerberg has publicly apologized for breaching members' privacy. A new Facebook advertisement system, dubbed Beacon, let users notify their friends when they purchased something on other websites, such as eBay. But many users were enraged when they discovered that Beacon alerted their friends without permission, and the system was unable to be switched off. Zuckerberg published a statement on the Facebook blog last Wednesday, acknowledging Beacon had been a breach of privacy, saying that, "We've made a lot of mistakes building this feature, but we've made even more with how we've handled them." Zuckerberg went on to say that, "We simply did a bad job with this release, and I apologize for it." Beacon has now been modified so that users must opt in on each partner site before their activities are sent to friends. Additionally, users are now able to disable the system entirely. The New York Times last week reported that internet access will be returning to US airline JetBlue Airways, with Virgin American, American Airlines, and Alaska Airlines following suit in 2008. While Boeing's Connection in-flight broadband service was originally well received, the service was shut down in mid-2006 because it was supposedly too expensive to operate. Now, JetBlue Airways has announced that a free Wi-Fi service will be available this week, initially on just one Airbus A320. Only users of Yahoo Mail or Yahoo Messenger will be able to send and receive email and send and receive instant messages to and from friends. Also, only handheld devices like the BlackBerry 8820 will initially be supported. And a new development by IBM researchers could reduce energy consumption and dramatically increase bandwidth in the world's supercomputers. ITY last week reported that the breakthrough, claimed by IBM's Watson Research Center, is a greatly improved modulator which converts electrical signals into light pulses. Researchers have succeeded in making a new electro-optic modulator between 100 and 1,000 times smaller than previous devices. Mr. Will Green, lead IBM scientist on the project, said that this was a major advancement in the field of on-chip silicon nanophotonics. According to IBM officials, the new modulator allows different processing cores to communicate via pulses of light through silicon instead of through conventional electric signals on wires. Using light instead of wires to send information between the cores could be up to 100 times faster and use 10 times less power than wires. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Google is going up for auction on the 700 meg band in the States. How does that compare with WiMAX?
Well, you're paying upstream bandwidth. Whoa. You have to anyway, backwards and forwards, so that the application works.
A 33-year-old South Korean quarry worker was found dead with a burning mobile phone stuck to his chest.
You recognise that these are hoaxes. There's no way that this could be true.
Dr. Ron, they said you have to have a last name. He said, but I don't have a last name.
Yeah, but they're all city-centric deals too.
The sinister bit is that they've been collecting all this data to use on the new service without necessarily telling people what they were doing.
Got out of bed at 3 a.m. last week, stumbled down the hallway, accidentally stepped on several cats and one of our dogs.
You're an anomaly. You're a statistical blip.
What the worry is, though, it's not always as obvious as that.
Facebook spam.
Facebook spam.
This is Dr. Ron. Now, what's going on here?
And, of course, that caused all kinds of unrest throughout the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no.
No?
No. Oh. There'll be people going, what the hell are they talking about?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the last one for 2007. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan here tonight. And there's a few proxies, no doubt, out there listening to us. How are you, boys?
Very good, thanks, Andrew.
Dr. Ron, you're looking a bit dreary. What's going on? You've been up all night.
I have had a couple of late nights recently, but no, just give me a poke and a prod throughout the show. We'll be right.
Get a good stiff coffee into you very shortly, and that'll be good.
Yeah, that's the one.
So here we are, boys, the end of the year, 2007. It's been a very interesting year, hasn't it?
It arrived at last. We got through 2007. I thought that election campaign would never end.
Well, it's sort of still continuing on. We're on the back end. We're on the hindsight told you so type sort of scenario at the moment with the federal election. We're going to be talking a little bit about that tonight too. Interesting week technology-wise. You probably haven't had much of a chance to have a bit of a look. You're looking, really, you've been back at work. I'm impressed.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
Very good. I'll just start off this evening with a couple of issues. There's some fairly nasty new little viruses doing the rounds at the moment, one of which got onto one of my machines across the course of the weekend.
Oh, really?
And it was so new, in fact, that Kaspersky didn't pick it up the first time it came through.
Yep.
And having since done an upgrade and had a bit of a look, I thought, here we go. So this is the sort of surprises we've got in store in the next few weeks, and especially as Christmas comes out, because there's a lot of phishing going on. It only ramps up around Christmas time as everyone does their online shopping. You guys, boys, can do online shopping this year?
Yeah, well, I usually do online shopping.
I know, you're normally a big pro of that. What, do you use Wishlist still? Is that still around?
I've been using Wishlist for years. That was a great one.
You used to go pick it up at a local service station or something,
didn't
you?
Yeah. How did you know you were infected? That's what I wanted to know.
How did I know? It was a bit of a telltale sign, actually, because I was just sort of browsing my directories on my hard drive, and I have several hard drives in one of the machines. And when I browse my files, I have show hidden on so I can see all my hidden files.
Yes.
And I was just browsing through them and I thought, that's odd. What's autoexec.inf doing on one of my little, autorun.inf doing on one of my machine drives, which is a hard drive which never boots.
Ah.
And it was a very hidden file.
So that what the virus is trying to do there, it's trying to infect your USB key.
Exactly.
So that it automatically runs when you plug your key into another machine.
Yes.
But it's found all your extra hard drives and infected them instead.
Exactly, right.
Naughty virus.
Was a naughty little... It's a Trojan by the true sense of the word. Now, I did a bit of a search on it. And
now, you're admitting to something there. If it was a Trojan rather than a virus, you're admitting that you got tricked into running something at some point.
Well, that's very funny you should mention that, but it wasn't on my workstation. And I don't run things on my servers just by chance either, and it was on one of the servers.
Right.
So I don't know how it got there unless something had been executed remotely, and they're normally fairly locked down. But anyway, we won't go into the technicalities of running servers.
Sometimes these things are multi-vector attacks, so there can be a viral component, there can be a Trojan component, there can be a spread by USB key component, and they're all different attacks by the same creature.
Yes. Well, this was a somewhat insidious attack because I tried getting rid of it manually based on what I've been reading in news blogs and things like that. And there wasn't much about in the news blogs because it was very recent, this little guy.
Yep.
So, but at the end of the day, I ended up downloading a bit of software that actually detected this little guy and said he would remove it. But once again, it failed because it was too new.
Yep.
It got rid of it, but it came back. It was hidden in a couple of other files. So, and it was only once I did the update with Kaspersky, literally that afternoon, that I noticed that there was an infection, that it managed to disperse it.
That's one of the,
rid of it.
Yes, that's one of the biggest dangers with computing these days. Because we're all connected and online and things happen so quickly, the viruses can spread before the antivirus vendors become aware of them and have a chance to create the fix. And as you discovered, sometimes the first generation fix is only a fairly rough and ready fix, and there's a better one comes down the track.
Let's talk about our favourites of the year, Telstra.
Yeah, versus the federal court.
Yeah, well, it's official this week. If you didn't know it, Telstra fibbed. It was not legitimate to say that NextG actually went everywhere.
We don't have everywhere you need it.
We don't even need to put an allegedly in front of that because the federal court says they did. They misled their customers.
Telstra probably know its NextG advertising campaign was misleading and expected to write it off at the cost of doing business. They deliberately did it, apparently. Well, that's according to an IBRS analyst. Jeff Booth is the general manager of Telstra Countrywide, and this is what he had to say when he was asked, was this a big blow or was it a big loss to the company?
This advertising was taken out of the market months and months ago, and the line that we're currently using is one which talks about the speed and the coverage of this mobile network and they're facts that can't be argued with. I guess there's lots of advertising which is done. I mean, does Vegemite put a rose on every cheek? You know, we stand by the advertising. We're probably going to appeal the decision. And this is all about the performance of the network now. We're not sure what orders we'll receive from the court. We'll handle that when it comes up. But we're certainly more interested in getting our customers moved onto the new network.
So let me get this straight. One of his defences there was that Vegemite may not put a rose on every cheek. Therefore, we don't have to be truthful in our advertising either.
There's a saying in advertising, if you can't stun them with science, baffle them with other things.
Yes, bulldust.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. And that was like, what?
There's a distinct lack of comment there about the details of the campaign. He just said that we'd moved on from that and that was something that it was in the past.
Thanks for coming next.
Okay, yes, that's the other point. It doesn't matter that we may have misled people in the past.
But that doesn't matter now. No, we've changed their advertising anymore. Now. It's all okay.
We're misleading them in a different way now.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I have said that.
Like an allegedly. Sorry. There.
Viewers of Dr. Graham there over there. But it's interesting. Also, we're starting to see fallout from the federal election in the telecommunications industry at the moment. Not to mention the Telstra rejecting the new government's broadband plans. And this is, if we didn't say, couldn't see this one coming. But in essence, what the Labor government offered or is offering compared to the outgoing Liberal government was virtually the same. They wanted to work with a consortium of private organisations to build a very high-speed, super-fast broadband network. Now, Telstra from day one has said, no, that's not what we're doing. We're doing it our way. And pretty much they've said, and this is not their words, this is my words, it's my way or the highway type sort of attitude that they've basically had. Yep. And I think pretty much we're going to see a bit of a fracas start to boil over and become quite public and quite, I don't know, ugly. And it'll be a true test of character, I think, of the new Prime Minister, Mr. Kevin Rudd.
Certainly will be, yes.
Now, the other interesting thing too, which has happened, it's all happening this week. Good week to go on holidays, boys, don't you think? Labor's new Broadband Minister has officially dismantled the expert task force installed by John Howard's government to set up its planned fibre-to-the-node network. In an announcement sent to interested parties last week, the expert task force said that the development guidelines around the network has now been stopped. So this was a group of individuals and organisations that were actually designed to advise the then Liberal federal government about how to roll out broadband. So that's interesting that Labor's come in and said, nah, we'll have none of this. Maybe they have their own plans.
Maybe they have their own experts that they're planning to bring in.
Let's talk briefly about mobile broadband. Mobile broadband, wonderful thing, very cutthroat business at the moment, except for one carrier. They're choosing to keep their prices very high. Let's talk about Three. Three is a city-centric Hutchison network provider.
Yep.
And they've absolutely slashed the prices of their broadband, but there's a catch.
What's the catch?
You got to be on a two-year contract. Basically.
Oh, no.
Can you access it without being on a contract?
Yeah, you can. You got your $29 plan for that. But if you have a mobile phone, chances are you've got that on a two-year plan anyway, because that's just the way you tend to do it these days. You are entitled to have 1 gigabyte of broadband access for $14.95 a month, including the card.
Right.
So there you go. That's in response to what Vodafone and Optus are doing in the marketplace at the moment.
So. Okay. They've had a big campaign about this. I've seen lots of advertising
Well, they're going to have to change all the things at the bus stop, aren't they?
To Christmas. Yeah, on the bus stops and on the buses and everything else.
Because it's quite competitive. Now, Optus are also, they're doing all sorts of things too, just in relation to the broadband that we spoke about, the fibre to the node sort of thing. Optus have come out and said that the Group of Nine, the G9 telecommunications company, led by Optus and backed by investment bank Investec and other high-speed broadband companies, are more than happy to come on board with the $4.7 million tender that they want for rolling out fibre to the rest of Australia. That's one hand. And on the other hand, they've come down and said, if you exceed your limits, we're going to bill you big time. So if you're an Optus broadband customer, watch out. They've unveiled the new Fusion Home phone and broadband bundles for customers who exceed their usage. They could be slapped a charge of up to $300.
Ouch.
Yep, that's not $30. Up to $300 if you exceed your broadband usage. So watch out if you've got kids in the family that like doing downloading music, songs, peer-to-peer, playing games,
yep.
And you get a regular, you know, instead of shaping it, they do shape it, but they're going to ping you $300 in the
so
process.
So they shape it and they charge you.
Yeah, early
that is just evil. Yeah. No one buy this plan. This sounds just completely wrong to me.
Earlier this year, Optus launched Fusion, and yesterday it added two options to the list, which features download limits of 2 gigabytes and 20 gigabytes. However, it introduced the new condition whereby customers who exceed these limits would have to pay 15 cents per megabyte. This will be capped at 2 gigabytes, a maximum excess usage charge of $300. Internet conditions would then slow down after that point. So they'll take your $300 and then they'll speed limit you.
God.
I'd have to agree with Graham's comments.
Ladies and gentlemen, do not go on that plan.
That is absolutely unacceptable.
Robbery.
You need to do one or the other, and you need to enter into a contract which suits you, and either you want the plan shaped, or you'd certainly don't want to pay $300 over what you're expecting.
$300.
Up to $300.
And bear in mind, you only have to have what happened to Andrew this week. You get a virus on your system that starts, you know, doing things without your permission, or you accidentally have some, you know, something connect up with, you know, running. You'll accidentally leave your file sharing running overnight or whatever, and that's the territory you're straight into.
Exactly. Mm. But for them to actually be doing both,
yep.
To be charging you extra and to be shaping the plan's very, very wrong.
That's pure profiteering. They could shape it from the time you go over, which would reduce the amount you go over.
Yeah, they're having their cake and eating it too, aren't they?
Yep. No, unacceptable. There are much better deals out there. Go find them.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Apple. And
Apple?
Yes. You know, the other computer company.
Yeah.
And Microsoft.
Yeah.
Adam Turner's got a view on this, and this is the view from the couch for the final time for 2007.
Adam Turner's view from the couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Renovate or move, it's the ultimate question in both real estate and computing. I live in a tiny house, and with a wife and two young kids, it's getting smaller every day. We know we need to do something, and we're trying to decide whether to extend the house next year or just sell up and buy something better elsewhere. At the same time, I've come to my wit's end with Windows. For work, I use a ThinkPad T60 notebook running XP. It does the job, but I'm getting sick of fighting with Windows. Like other Microsoft products, XP tends to be bloated and sluggish at times. Every now and then, it just grinds to a halt for no reason, even though I reinstall the OS every now and then. I reckon I waste about 30 minutes a day fighting with XP. I want something that just works. So, if XP is no longer up to the task, what are my options? Renovate or move. Renovating means upgrading to Vista. Now, my house is old and dodgy on a small block. No matter how much effort I put into it or money I spend on it, it's never going to be everything I want. There seems little point in sinking time and money into something that I'm never going to be completely happy with. That's also how I feel about Vista. Vista is always going to be a Microsoft product. It's always going to be bloated eye candy, and it's always going to be designed to suit Microsoft's needs rather than my needs. Despite Microsoft's transparent efforts to pretend it supports open standards, living in Microsoft world often means using proprietary Microsoft formats and getting stuck on the Windows upgrade treadmill. Enough is enough. It's time to move to greener pastures. So where do I go? Now, I live in a small house, but in a fancy suburb, so I've only got to move a few streets and I'll get a much bigger house for the same money. When it comes to my computer, if I'm leaving the land of Microsoft, then I need to choose between Linux and Mac, both of which harbour zealots who believe their platform is the one true God. Now, I'm not leaving Windows for philosophical reasons. I'm on a practical quest to find something that just works. I spent the last year gradually weaning myself off Microsoft software and moving to applications that run on Windows, Mac or Linux, such as Firefox for web browsing, Thunderbird for email, Audacity for recording audio and FileZilla for uploading and downloading files via FTP. I knew this would make life easier when I started to experiment with other operating systems. I started off by installing a version of Linux called Ubuntu on my notebook alongside XP. The latest version of Ubuntu, 7.10, known as Gutsy Gibbon, has a lot going for it. If you know your way around Windows and you're not afraid to dip into the command line every now and then, Ubuntu or another easy to use Linux distro might be right for you. It can be a steep learning curve if you run into problems. Unfortunately, I ran into a few problems trying to recreate my standard XP desktop on Linux. Some of the problems were due to the fact I was trying to recreate my backup system on Ubuntu, and I was having trouble finding the right software for the job because the tool I used in Windows isn't available on Linux or Mac. Another was to do with hardware. Ubuntu randomly refused to recognize my USB devices and I had a few networking issues. I get the impression that your opinion of Linux depends on your hardware. If everything works for you straight away, it seems great, but if it doesn't, you'll need to spend some time trawling the web looking for solutions. If you really want hassle-free computing, you need hardware and software that is specifically designed for each other. Obviously, we're talking about a Mac. Now, if I'm looking for something that just works, rather than making a religious statement, I need to be open to Mac as well as Linux. As such, I decided to try working on a 17-inch MacBook Pro for a week, running Apple's latest Cat Leopard, to see how it went. A week later, I'm sold, and I'm making plans to buy a 13-inch MacBook in the near future. Now, Mac users are smug bastards, but with good reason. Macs just work. Once I had all my software set up, it was easy to forget I was using a Mac, because everything just worked and the operating system didn't get in the way. It's pretty hard to forget when you're working on Windows, because Windows is always slowing you down or getting in your way. I still had trouble getting my backups to work and finding a word processor I liked on a Mac, but I decided to kill two birds with one stone by switching to an online word processor. The more apps I can run in a web browser, the easier it is to switch between computers and operating systems. Of course, you need to always be online, but with the current mobile data price war, always being online is finally an option in Australia. I'm reasonably happy with Google apps for editing text and spreadsheets, but I haven't found an online calendar and email client that I'm completely happy with. The main problem is that online apps generally don't have good pop-up notifications compared to desktop apps. Unfortunately, I'm not completely happy with Thunderbird on the Mac for email either. So for the time being, I think I'll use the Mail and iCal desktop applications on the Mac, but I'll keep looking for a completely online solution. So, big changes are afoot for 2008. I'm ditching Windows, I'm ditching my tiny house, and I'm looking to make a fresh start in the promised land.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's that time of the year again, and everybody at Tech Talk Radio would like to wish you and yours a happy and safe Christmas. And we look forward to keeping you up to date with all the breaking tech news and gossip next year on Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McCollum, Dr. Ron, and Graham Callaghan.
Adam's going to the dark side. This will all end in tears.
I heard you say that. Yes. Controversy aplenty there, going to Mac. Well, I don't think it's too bad a thing. Like, depends on what you're doing, really, doesn't it? Like,
that's the key to it, yeah.
If you're doing, you know, CAD work and you need grunt and PC type sort of applications, well, the PC is for you. If you're doing word processing, emails, the odd spreadsheet, the Mac is good. Now, they're all good. You know, choose the right tool for the job.
And what'll be really interesting will be to see 6 months, 12 months down the track, if he's still as pleased with his Mac as he was in that little episode.
You're inferring that he may not be, or are you posing the question?
I'm just posing the question because, you tend to find that as you go along, you find more and more of the annoyances that are hidden away.
Mm.
He also mentioned that he was making a big move to moving a lot of applications online, things that we've traditionally done, like Office Suite applications.
That was a bit A bit brave, I
thought. Yeah, email, things like...
live on the edge from time to time, and no better place to do it than in computing, I would have thought.
Yeah. Living on the edge of the couch. Fair enough.
He was. Yeah, there's no sharp edges down there anyway. All right, another bit of good news this week. We can finally say that we've cracked Brisbane. Tech Talk Radio can now be heard in Brisbane on Switch 1197.
Fantastic. So hello, Brisbane.
Hello, Brisbane.
Hey, Brizzy, to all of our new Brizzy listeners out there, probably going, who the hell are these guys? Well, hey, listen, you've got a surprise coming for you. Have a visit of our website, techtalkradio.com.au. There's lots of past shows there and stuff like that. So welcome aboard to everybody at Switch 1197 in Brisbane. Isn't that great? Alrighty, let's talk about websites. Have you guys built websites, no doubt? Have you built them with all the right things in mind is the ultimate question. I recently caught up with Lance Loveday and Sandra Niehaus, authors of Web Design for Return on Investment. Congratulations on Web Design for ROI, a topic which is near and dear to my heart. What was your inspiration for the book?
It was a bit of frustration, actually, in that so many clients that we dealt with over the years just didn't appreciate the potential value that they could get out of their website. And we kept having to educate clients again and again on the same types of topics. And it came to us over time that, well, perhaps we should think about writing a book. And fortunately, we're approached in the same time frame by a publisher, so it was a fortunate confluence of events.
So what's your background in web design? Do you guys do it professionally?
Yes, I've done it professionally since about 1995. I have a background in programming that goes back to, I hate to say it, back to the early 80s. And and once I had done some paths through the music field and teaching and various other interesting career moves, I moved into web design and web programming. So I've been doing that since the early 90s.
Consumers are more web savvy now than they have been in any other time in history. What are they looking for in a website when they're researching, say, for example, their next purchase?
Well, they're looking for ease of use, for one thing, and it's amazing to us how people's habits have evolved and they've gotten more sophisticated over time, but they're looking for, you know, in large part the same things they always have. And that comes down to ease of use, intuitiveness, the right product information at the right time, reassurance that the entity that they're dealing with is credible, that their website is secure, all of these things.
You mentioned credibility there. How important is a company's website when it comes to building and maintaining their credibility and, importantly, their reputation?
Oh, it's in this day and age, it's especially important as more and more people, even if they don't end up purchasing online, they still go online to research a company and research a product. So, and even business to business and people hiring other vendors and employees, they go online to research that company and the person. So, and it's been shown in research that within the first 1/20th of a second when someone arrives at a website, they have already decided whether that company is professional, whether they're credible, and whether they want to continue to interact with that company. So that's not enough time for them to read any of your great copy or look at the design of your website, at the navigation of your website. It's only enough time for them to get that instant hit from the design. So the design is really crucial.
On page one of your book, Sandra, you've got 75% of web users admit making judgments about the credibility of an organization based on the design of its website. Is that only going to improve?
I think that number, yes, will increase as more and more people become familiar with the web and more people begin to use it to research companies and make sure that they're legitimate. There's still quite a large number of people that have not yet come online, or if they do come online, they don't spend much time there. So the potential for the web to provide information about companies and about products is still largely untapped.
If anything, I would say that number is understated. That number represents the percentage of people who acknowledge being aware of making these judgments. I think actually that number is probably closer to 100% in that we're all affected consciously or subconsciously by the interface that we're dealing with and make these judgments about the perceived credibility of the organization behind it based on the quality of that design.
It's not unlike a magazine in a newsstand, is it, where you can actually look at a quality of the stock, the glossiness of the paper, the photography in it, and get the impression about what the magazine or the organization's about, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very similar to that, and except here we don't have that tactile feel of the paper or the you know, the look of, you know, that sense of weight, you know, if you can pick up a physical product, that sort of thing. So it's purely visual. And so that gives designers a lot of power, which we really like.
Yeah, it wasn't so long ago that companies built websites because everyone else was doing it. So when do you reckon the penny dropped for business and websites became a necessity and warranted this investment in time and resources?
Well, probably different times for different organizations, but you started to see the big players get involved really about 98, 99, when they really started jumping in and investing, and they've only ramped up that investment since as the return has been there. And obviously with the growth in e-commerce revenues, with the growing use of the Internet as a research vehicle, and increasingly where more and more media is being consumed, more and more organizations realize that they have to invest more and more to get that return, to maximize on the potential opportunity represented by the online medium.
And obviously we have strategies when it comes to advertising. How important is an online strategy these days?
It's critical for any major initiative. You've got to have some good sense for what you're doing. And in fact, we devote part of the book to outlining what we think the major components of a website strategy should be, because so many of the site owners that we interact with have never actually documented that out. And I think there's an assumption in many cases that everyone knows what you're trying to accomplish, but quite often much of the internal conflict that we see when we work with clients has to do with differing assumptions about what the goal of the website should be. And when you're able to come in and help to clarify that for organizations, it makes everyone on the team that much more effective, that much more efficient, in that their jobs become clearer when you do have a well-defined strategy.
Yeah, and something we're seeing, a trend that's really exciting, is just this combination of online and offline advertising and marketing strategies, so that they're like one complete 360-degree advertising and marketing effort, and the website becomes just a piece of that, whereas there are TV ads, there are viral offline efforts going on, and all sorts of things that drive people to the website. And then when you're doing that, then you better be sure that your website is ready to receive that traffic and convert them.
It's a good point you make, actually. Advertising is, or could be considered as, an investment in business growth, and traditionally large budgets have been allocated to achieve this. As a percentage of total investment, what sort of funding should be given to an online presence, and what sort of return would you be expecting for your investment?
Well, it's hard to put a firm number on it. Again, I think it'll be different for every organization. But generally, the pattern that we see is that people spend far, far more than they do driving traffic to the website than they do on the website itself and thinking through that user experience. And what that usually means is that the website itself underperforms relative to its potential. And in our view, more and more organizations should be looking at investing more in the website, increasing the effectiveness of the website, increasing their conversion rate, their time on site, whatever their goal for the website is, such that they get the benefit of that increased conversion rate from that point on for all traffic that they drive moving forward. And the return on that type of an investment really is immense normally compared to the day in, day out having to purchase traffic to the website. Better to invest once up front, make the whole thing more efficient, and then yield that benefit on an ongoing basis over time for all future traffic.
To conclude, guys, where to from here? How are sites going to evolve, and are we going to see more rich media come into websites? In fact, let's look, say, 4 years down the track. What are the websites of 2012 going to look like, and how will we be interacting with them?
Well, I think we'll be interacting with them in largely the same way, but they'll operate much more smoothly than they will now, and we'll see much heavier usage of Ajax and Flash-type technologies, where there won't be as much page reloading. More transactions will occur, if you will, via this so-called pageless design, where you will have pages expanding and collapsing in response to different actions you take, and as you fill in information, for example. And so the speed at which the whole experience operates, I think, will be increased dramatically. And hopefully, this will be done in a way that it's still very intuitive and easy for users to use. And overall, this will contribute to the, you know, the growth in e-commerce and in the growth rates of people using the internet to research products and get useful things done in their lives.
I think another major trend coming on board as well is the expansion of the mobile web. As wireless networks expand, as the technology expands as far as devices to interact with the internet, that will be a larger portion of website development, is making sure that your website is also accessible from a mobile device and available that way as well.
All interesting points, and I think it's very much going to be an interesting landscape as it evolves in the next few years. Lance Loveday and Sandra Niehaus, thank you very much. Your book, Web Design for Return on Investment, is available, I think you were saying, on Amazon. Is that right? If listeners want to try and pick up a copy, because I think it's good for the business, the CEO, the marketing guy, the web designer, anyone who has any interest in web design whatsoever, you can start off with some good habits, I think.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Now you know all about websites. We expect good ones from now on from everybody. Go and download the podcast and be sure to make notes. Or better still, visit the website that we gave, webdesignforreturnoninvestment.com, and go and have a bit of a shop online and buy yourself a copy of the book. Very well worth the money if you're into that sort of thing.
It was good hearing Sandra talk about checkouts and user-friendliness of same, because sometimes you come across some hideous online shopping cart applications and checkouts, and you just get lost.
I hate them.
You go around in loops and you think, hang on, I was here before. What am I doing here? How do I pay? How do I get out of this?
I tell you what, PayPal are doing some really good things with online credit card transactions and what do you call those things? The PayPal itself, where you put your email address in and pay somebody.
The verification process?
And if you're a merchant, or even if you just want to sell certain things, you can go and link your own bank account up and accept a credit card. Like you, Dr. Ron, could be able to take credit card through a secure process directly put into your account without even having to go to your bank and organise it. So there's some good options out there. That's probably a good chat for next year, actually. Get someone in from PayPal Australia to maybe talk about what you can do online these days.
I like PayPal.
I do too. It's very secure, isn't it?
It is. Very
out
helpful.
Of everything out there, it's really, really good. So anyway, we had some emails during the break and I've lost them on my screen at the moment, so talk amongst yourselves while I find them. In the meanwhile, let's talk about Google and TomTom, shall we? Two of the big guns in
TomTom, of course, being navigation
satellite
devices.
Navigation, all that. SatNav vendor TomTom has added support for Google Maps, allowing users to send street addresses and search results directly from the map software to a GPS device. The new Send GPS option will be available to Google Map users when the GPS system is connected to a PC. That's a pretty good idea. Any of you guys used a TomTom or anything like that?
Yep.
What do you reckon?
I love TomTom. It's really, really quite helpful. I used one when I went to Tasmania earlier this year, and helped me find my way around. It made it sort of, didn't have to think about reading maps and have maps in unfamiliar territory. You just go where it tells you, and it gets you there.
I think that's where they're the most useful. If you're in unfamiliar territory, somewhere you don't have a lot of local knowledge.
Yep.
They're very helpful.
Absolutely.
I had a bit of an update, Andrew, about Google Maps My Location service.
Oh, this is the thing you were frustratingly trying to get happening on your mobile last week.
I still haven't had any success. We did speak about it last week, and supposedly the beta or the trial is being offered in Australia. I determined that you did actually have to update your Google Maps software. So if you've already got it installed on a mobile device, you download a new one. The version that I found, which seemed to be most common, was version 2.0.1. And when you go with different devices, it sort of automatically selects a version which corresponds with your particular device.
So have you got it working or not?
No. I tried it on my Sony Ericsson mobile phone, and I got a message which said, my location is not available on this device. And I thought, well, that's a bit strange. Why would it be device-dependent, the My Location service?
I'll have to download it on mine and give it a whirl. But no, I've got similar brands, similar phones, so yeah, potentially it won't work.
I tried it on the iMate Jazz Jar as well and didn't have any success. But certainly the feature is built in to the software, and you now have a My Location option in the menus where you didn't have one in the past. But because it's in beta, maybe it's still being rolled out, still being implemented.
Yep, maybe they're still adding support for different devices. Maybe it depends on the device, whether the software can get access to the information it needs from the phone side of the device.
Potentially, that might be your restriction, Graham. So that's a quick update for My Location. If you've got it working on your mobile device,
please tell us all about it.
Yes, tell us how to get it working.
Ring the feedback line, send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, or better still, jump on the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, and tell us all about it.
Make sure you're wearing a sombrero at the time, though.
If you want to know what that means, listen to the ads.
Exactly. Okay, now somebody who has sent us an email is someone who I can empathise with at the moment. A very big cheerio, my heartfelt. I'm with you there, Alan. Alan Reitz, if that's R-E-I-T-Z, send us an email to feedback. He's in North America, a long way from where we're broadcasting from at this very point in time. We get a lot of emails that come in through the course of the show, but this one actually had us laughing as we were reading it out. I've got young kids, and Alan was having one of those experiences where he'd been down to put his youngster back to bed and discovered that there was he'd been sick all through the bed clothes and the likes, which is not a really nice experience. I've been there before, Alan, at 5 o'clock in the morning.
It's very early in the morning over there.
So he's, without going through the great long and drawn out thing, he's decided, should he leave it for his wife to come back to, because his wife's gone away for a holiday.
The consensus was you should put some crime scene tape up over your front door, just move everybody out, go and hire a motel room and let the wife worry about it in a few days.
Yeah.
I think there might be some medium-term problems with that solution.
As our Senator Coonan,
very attractive in the short term.
As Senator Coonan says over here, there'll be some residual powers floating up.
That may be invoked.
But anyway, Alan, it's great that you can join us live over there. Sorry, we didn't mean to get you up this hour of the morning, but glad you joined us. When I was reading the email, I thought, what, she's got internet radio in a bit? Oh, no. Anyway, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, the last time for the year. 2008. We'll return in February to talk more. Dr. Ron, I have some sad news for you.
Oh.
Syria has blocked your Facebook page.
Now, this is personally disturbing to me and quite upsetting.
Have you got many Syrian friends?
Well, I do. I think I have a large following in Syria. It's rather sad that they, not only Facebook, but that they block anything that's not... Not really conducive to happy internet usage, is it?
What specifically have they got against Facebook?
Why don't they like Facebook?
Well, Syrian authorities have blocked Facebook, the popular internet hangout, over what seems to be fears of Israeli infiltration of Syrian social networks on the net, according to residents.
I see.
So,
well, that makes sense.
Does it?
No.
Residents of Damascus said that they have not been able to enter Facebook for more than 2 weeks now. Ooh, if that was you, Doctor, you'd have withdrawals. Even during the breaks here, you sit out there and get the phone out and check who's been, who your new friends are.
Your
on
status
Facebook.
Would be out of date. It would be showing the mood from 2 weeks ago. Ooh, horror
that'd
horrors.
Be terrible. That'd be really bad, actually.
We'll be back after this.
You're listening,
Dr. Ron.
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
I understand to give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do appear.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own. Well, this week's gadget is just the thing we need in a world of climate change and needing to reduce greenhouse emissions and all that.
Kyoto
yeah. and all that.
Have we ratified that yet?
I believe we did.
Yeah. Oh, good.
This is a solar-powered wheelchair.
Oh, fantastic. That's just what you need.
A research team from Southern Taiwan University of Technology has successfully rolled out the first solar-powered wheelchair in the world. Apparently, it'll cost less than current model manual or electric wheelchairs and, reduce the amount of electronic waste produced during manufacturing. So they've gone through the whole process here.
No, seriously, that's a good idea, don't you think?
Well, except till you see the picture.
how large are the?
Can you describe it to us? Like, what have we got?
Well, it's got it's a chair on wheels, you know, typical.
Yeah, it looks like a wheelchair.
One of those mobility device type ones, but it's got this big thing right over the top of it.
Oh, like a canopy.
Like a canopy.
Oh, so you don't need a brolly anymore.
Two huge panels right over the top. So
how can it cost less? I wonder.
I don't know.
Because there'd be a lot more technology in that, I would have thought.
Good question.
Yeah, the blurb that I'm reading doesn't go into that, but yeah, apparently they've been right through the process and designed it all in a very green way, which is good.
A practical solution to a world's climate change problems. I think that's great. All right, that's the Tech Talk Radio.
Step in the right direction.
Gadget, the last gadget for 2007.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is the year's best website.
Oh, you saved the best for last, haven't you, Dr. Ron?
Now, when I had this sent to me and I had a look at something that somebody had done on this website, I was in fits of laughter.
I have
rolling,
seen this. I was crying.
I was rolling around on the floor. You were crying. Graham just hung his head and despaired when he saw what we'd done.
Yes, I think his words were, "Dr. Ron, you can't be trusted with computers."
I think
something
so.
To that effect.
What everybody needs to do is go to the Tech Talk Radio homepage.
Hang on.
TechTalkRadio.com.au. There's a link on the Tech Talk Radio homepage with four little elves.
They look very familiar, don't
elves,
they?
Elves, yes, they look very familiar.
So there is. It's a little way down in the second column. Yep.
It is. It's a very Tech Talk Christmas message to everybody. Four little Tech Talk radio panelists doing a little dance for you. The website itself is actually called Elf
Go
Yourself.
Elf Yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Elfyourself.com. And you can put your own photos online. You can get little elves doing little dances for you.
But come via our website and check us out.
You
it's
need
hilarious.
To come, you need to come need by to the Tech Talk one first and see my handiwork as well.
www.techtalkradio.com.au. Yes.
There's four of us there. Dr. Ron, Graham, myself.
And Mark Diggins.
And Mark there, yes.
Yes. There's a very clever little user interface on this website where you can highlight a person's face and you can upload an image. You don't have to be an expert in graphic design in order to get this to look rather funny, and it's great for this time of the year. You can send a URL or a link to all of your friends at work and have a bit of fun.
I cried. It's the best Christmas thing I've seen in a long time.
Especially when everyone's silly enough to put their photos up on things like Facebook and
absolutely.
Instant access to people's images. There you go, elfyourself.com.
All right, via the Tech Talk Radio website of all places.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Shoot.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
It had to happen, and it has happened in the United Kingdom.
Oh.
The Age in Melbourne, Melbourne's newspaper, just today. I read it and I laughed. Not quite as much as I did with your website there, Dr. Ron. Had a good laugh. Stuart McNay of Huddersfield in England.
G'day, Stu.
Has had to change his ringtone five times. Only five times.
Oh.
Because his parrot keeps copying them. Billy the bird waits until he leaves the room because he's one of those from a bird from Bastards Incorporated.
Yes, yes.
and then he mimics the sound of the call. And seemingly delights in his owner's dash back into answer
and
the phone.
Stu
and it's
runs
the parrot doing it.
Now, we had another funny, clever parrot odd spot earlier.
Did we?
Yeah.
About can't remember it. I'll have to go back and listen to some of the
episodes.
Parrot
that was mimicking the smoke alarm and actually saved a family from almost certain doom.
I remember that one,
By waking them up, mimicking a smoke alarm when there was actually a fire and the smoke alarm had failed. Mm.
Memories like my five-year-old. She can remember everything I've told
her. I don't remember
you.
Anything useful. Just odd spots.
dear.
Very good.
So there you go. That's Tech Talk Radio for 2007. As Burt Bacharach pounds out the Christmas carols there in the background.
Over in Studio 2. We've got the door open here so I can hear.
It's been a very interesting year in a lot of respects. We've had elections. We've had all sorts of interesting guests in the studio. We've had a lot of people do a lot of hard work on the show. We've had a lot of wives that have been very understanding and sometimes the comments have been very interesting from time to time. So thank you to Linda and Lainey, the partners concerned, and Mark's partner, Sue. They've all been very understanding in letting us do what we do on the weekends and all for naught because we do it for passion and love. That's what makes Tech Talk Radio a little bit different. And thanks also to everyone who's participated. Dr. Ron, you put in some fantastic efforts across the course of the year. Your promos that we play coming into the show, the previously.
Thank you. All for the good of the country.
Awfully embarrassing at times. Yeah. Like, gee, did we really say that? Graham, your podcast episodes over the course of the last year and before that been gratefully appreciated. It's great staying up all night Monday night, but thank you very much.
It's always a good time.
Yes, it's nice to do things when it's fresh in your mind, isn't
yes.
it? So that about rounds us out for 2007, for what's been a very memorable year. Mr. Conroy's got lots on to do, sort of he's got plenty on. So until we join you again next year on Tech Talk Radio, bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications and podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM, Highlands FM and Queer FM in Western Australia. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.